At Still Austin Whiskey Co., we make award-winning whiskey 100% in-house, from grain all the way to glass. We only use Texas-grown grains distilled in the heart of Austin, where the wild weather helps age our whiskey to perfection. Go to stillaustin.com for delivery right to your door today. Still Austin Whiskey, the art of Texas whiskey.
Texas Monthly.
Hey there, I'm John Spong with Texas Monthly Magazine, and this is One by Willie, a podcast in which I talk each week to one notable Willie Nelson fan about one Willie song that they really love. This week, we visit with four-time Oscar nominee Ethan Hawke, who will talk about Willie's song Too Sick to Pray. You probably know Ethan as a movie star, stage actor, director, and writer, but he also happens to be one of the most serious students of Willie Nelson that I've ever talked to. So he's going to talk not just about how Willie's songs tied him to his dad when he was a kid, but how the deep spiritual undertones of Too Sick to Pray and the album that it first appeared on, Spirit, from 1996, shaped the way that Ethan has raised his own family. And sprinkled in will be digressions on Bob Dylan, Matisse, Johnny Cash, the Dead Poets Society, and Earlobes. Oh, and he'll also describe how he'd make a Willie biopic and why he'd set it not during Willie's struggles in Nashville in the 60s or his breakthrough in Austin in the 70s, but in the right here and now. So let's do it.
These are...
Tell me about Too Sick to Pray.
Well, the thing is about Too Sick to Pray is that whole album, Spirit, I don't know. It's right up there on the Willie Nelson top five, as I'm concerned, as far as the most representative of the best that Willie Nelson has to offer. I mean, nobody else in the world would make Redheaded Stranger, Teatro, or Spirit. I mean, they're just quintessentially... something, you know, one of my favorite Bob Dylan quotes is somebody asked him what he has left to do. And he said, well, I'm still trying to make a record as good as Redheaded Stranger.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah. I always love that quote because it does live up there as far as like being a fully, completely realized artistic expression. Uh-huh. Something about it. It's singular in its expression. It's not like anybody else. He's not imitating anybody else. That's Willie Nelson. And it has different ages. He has different high watermarks. And for me, I felt Spirit, you know, what year did that come out? That was like the early 90s?
96.
So Spirit came out, that's right. Spirit came out the same year that my daughter was born. I got it the year my daughter was born. I guess it came out a little bit before. But so during the whole pregnancy, you know, it's such a moment in your life of transition, you know, you kind of feel like, yes, the baby is in a cocoon-like state and about to be a butterfly, all that kind of metaphor, but the parents are too, especially with your first child, you know?
Yeah.
You feel, and for me, it was kind of a connection to the Redheaded Stranger because Redheaded Stranger was so pivotal in my childhood. When my parents got divorced, my dad listened to Redheaded Stranger over and over and over and over and over again.
Wow.
He took me... In 1976, we drove from Fort Worth to Austin for the 4th of July picnic. And I mean, I'm telling you, my dad had that on LP. He had it on 8-track.
Uh-huh.
He played it on the piano. He had the songbook on his piano and he'd be playing all those songs. And I felt, you know, he was probably only 26 at the time, but he seemed like an old man to me, you know, what a grown man was.
Yeah.
And he was in a lot of pain. My dad, and this album was a real source of healing for him.
Yeah.
I can't say why, but I felt it as a kid. He just, the way it was on repeat all the time. And we would sing it, and there was something about the album's Spirit, the fact that he was still writing such beautiful music and willing to be so incredibly simple.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I compare Willie sometimes to Matisse, or it's some ancient parable where some king wants the perfect drawing of a lotus flower, right? Mm-hmm. And he hires this great artist and this great artist, and they all don't lack the life. And he goes to some ancient master and says, would you paint it? And in 3 seconds, he does the perfect drawing of a lotus flower. And it blows the king away. And he says, but it only took you 3 seconds. And he says, no, it took me a lifetime.
That's fantastic.
And that's the way I feel about the whole album's spirit.
Yeah.
Is it takes a lifetime to be that simple. You know, we don't run, we don't compromise, Too Sick to Pray. There's a couple great ones on that one. I'm Not Trying to Forget You Anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't have the album in front of me. Almost every song on it is absolutely phenomenal in its utter simplicity. And Too Sick to Pray, for me, it captures that strange feeling when you turn your back on your spiritual life, whatever you call that, your inner life, mm-hmm. your quest for the divine, whatever name you give that, that feels good. We all don't know where we were before we were born, and we all don't know where we go after we die, and we don't know why we're on a star in space. And every now and then, we remember that we don't know any of that.
Right.
And you have this kind of longing for a connection with the divine. And it captures that feeling of, I've been too sick to pray. Like, I was too caught up in my own nonsense to even remember my humility. And there's an unbelievable line in there where he says, remember the family, Lord. I know they remember you in all of their prayers. They talk to you just like I do. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But what's so incredible about that sentiment is most songs about reaching out and that are in pain to me are, they can be navel-gazing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hurting. I've got problems with alcohol. I've got problems with drugs. I got problems with heartbreak. I'm not getting what I want. I've got illness. And there's something in the toss-away line about remembering the family is that everybody we love is going through the same exact thing.
Huh.
All of the time.
Yeah.
All the time, they're too sick to pray, just like I am. And there's so much, you know, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Right.
There's so much of the best, the warmth that can come from Christianity at its best is present in that song for me. It made my heart feel so good when I was about 26, 27, coming across this album. And Willie came back into my life like he had when I was 6 or 7. Uh-huh. Only now I was getting ready to be a parent.
I've been too sick to pray, Lord. That's why we ain't talked in a while. It's been some of them days, Lord. I thought I was on my last mile.
If you're in love with the arts, the terrain around you is littered with so many people who lose their way, you know, who they have a little success, but they don't know how to do it right. Or I'm not judging about any of it. It's a hard path to stay on,
right?
Of being in service of the arts. And the fact that Willie has been able to do it so consistently for so long,
yeah,
was so inspiring to me, because Dead Poets Society came out when I was 18. And so I was just terrified that was going to be my high watermark in my life.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's a strange thing to be a part of a band or a group of people that really contributes artistically. Peter Weir was amazing. I mean, he's for people who love cinema, Peter Weir is a legend. He made Truman Show and Witness and Gallipoli and so many, The Year of Living Dangerously, so many great films. And when I worked with him, he was truly a master, right? And then also on set, you had a comic genius.
Yeah.
I mean, overused word, genius. But in Robin Williams' case, his brain does not work like other people's.
Yeah.
And I got to watch his creativity intersect with Peter Weir, John Seale, this brilliant cinematographer we had, who's also a staggering artist. And I got to do it with a group of young people, right? And so I got to share it. It wasn't me alone. You know, the other guys playing, the poets, we had this amazing experience. And so I had this feeling like, well, shit, it's not going to get any better than this, right? And I had to ask myself, well, what is the yardstick for success? And it pretty quickly you realize, well, it really can't be what the outside world thinks, or else I will be rendered into this being my high watermark.
Yeah.
I have to see it as not what is the arts going to do for me, but how can I help it? And Willie is an example of somebody who is in service of music. He's in service of ideas. You know, there's that book, The Tao of Willie, you know, that he's so clearly a part. He's cultivated an attitude and an awareness of being a part of the Tao, whatever that means to you, but he's moving with the river of life. And because of that, at every age, he's interesting because he's not trying to stay 33. He's not trying to stay 47. Right. He's clearly an old man now. He's not pretending he's not an old man. And by the time Spirit came out, you know, just even with the cover art on it, that beautiful photography of his, you know, he looked like an old wizard, didn't he? I mean, he looked like freaking Gandalf, right? And it just was really awe-inspiring to me that he could maintain this level of writing and musicianship. You know, his guitar playing might have been peak around Spirit. I mean,
yeah, it's an amazing guitar record.
It's some kind of high watermark, and why I admire it so much is like, yes, there's the high watermark of Jimi Hendrix and other sensational artists, but Willie's is an act of simplicity. And that's, you know, it's these clear lines. Even his latest song, Energy Follows Thought.
Yeah.
Right? That could have been on Spirit. Mm-hmm. That's the same songwriter. That's the same songwriter who wrote Always Now, one of my other all-time favorite songs. And, you know, that's the same guy who wrote Crazy. It's the same voice, yeah. Hello Walls. It's the same... it's that same, whatever that fire is in his chest, it's the same one.
So one of the things that kills me about Too Sick to Pray, a slightly different read, but it's like Willie is such a devout person. You know, what he believes is his own, you know, and so it's not standard or orthodox or whatever it might be, but he grew up in a Methodist church and went to that, and that stuff matters to him, and prayer matters to him. And the idea that he might be too down or in too much pain to reach out in a given moment is really powerful. It's such a unique spin on the way people talk about Christianity a lot of the time. It's like the great line in John Prine's Sam Stone, where he says there's a hole in Daddy's arm where all the money goes, and Jesus Christ died for nothing, I suppose.
I suppose.
That's a 10-year-old kid, supposedly, presumably, uttering that. How devastating, how heartbreaking that a 10-year-old just threw away everything that they ever believed. Similarly, for Willie to be too down and in too much pain, too sick to reach out, means that he was in a rough spot, but now he's on the other side and he's checking back in.
And I guess that's, you're saying a very similar thing really to what I was saying, because it's a different look at it. But if somebody we admire as much as Willie is feeling that, it means you can forgive yourself too.
Yeah.
But anyway, Willie embodies this thing in America, which is he truly is a Christian, and that is very important to him. Family Bible, those hymns. But he also is an extremely learned man who's traveled the world, and he's managed to learn to take what he's learned from the Tao or Buddhist traditions and see them alive and awake in Christian teachings. Alive in what Jesus means to him.
Yeah.
You feel that. I mean, it's Always Now is a profound sentiment when thought about as a Christian, when taking the Mass. You know, this beautiful idea that, you know, your grandfather didn't live 100 years ago. He lived in the present moment, just like you do.
Right.
And we're all a part of this cosmic now, right? And
I mean, I've never heard anybody write a country song about that. I mean, that's incredible, right? And it's a miracle, and he manages to get us all not afraid to think about volatile ideas like a higher power and philosophical belief.
Let's
should we spin the song?
Yeah, let's listen to Too Sick to Pray together.
Well, I reckon that's all, Lord. That's all I can think of to say. And thank you, my friend. We'll be talking again if I'm not too sick to pray.
I love that song so much. And listening to it again, new, it does it to me every time. Even the line, I reckon that's all, Lord.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me something my grandmother said to me, is that even when you're hurting and you don't want to pray, just taking a second to try, you know, it doesn't have to be long. You really just have to check in. And and then it becomes a habit. And there's something so funny about the line, I reckon that's all. You know, I did, Willie was, I don't know, it was some benefit, I think, for Austin musicians. And my daughter and I sang this song. If you could just see a little 8-year-old go, well, I reckon that's all, Lord. That's all I can think of to say. Because, you know, at our best, you know, we're all basically 8. You know, we don't have that many profound things. This is, and Willie does this so well over and over again, which is he finds one beautiful sentiment and writes a song around it. You know, hello walls, crazy, whatever. And
yeah,
it's almost all a song or a great poem can really handle is just one truth. I mean, obviously there's other great songs, you know, It's All Right, Mom, Only Bleeding does not apply to this idea. But what he does is one line, and he's not pretentious about it. I reckon that's all, Lord. There's not much else I can think of to say, except I'm so sorry I don't reach out more. I really do need you, and I'll talk to you as soon as I can. You know,
there's an implication of familiarity and closeness, and it's not talking to a deity, it's a relationship.
And I guess that's what it is, because I remember when I was confirmed in the Episcopal Church, and we had female priests, and this woman, her name was Reverend Jean Smith, and she was confirmed me, and she gave this talk once that's always stayed with me, which is, what if you imagine the divine as your best friend?
Huh.
Like, stop thinking of them as your father or your mother or the principal, or like this, the idea of God as man is that God actually understands what it's like to be you. He actually understands all those dumb thoughts that you're embarrassed by. You don't have to be ashamed. You have a witness, and you have a friend. And what if you talk to them like somebody who actually loved you and adored you and that you adored? And if you could cultivate that relationship, then in times of real trouble, you'll have a friend and you'll be a good friend.
Yeah.
You know? And there's something about, without being as pretentious as I just was, there's something about that song that just does that.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm talking about the simplicity of the old master who can play in a lotus. I reckon that's all means I don't have to put on airs with you. You know, I've been sick. You know, I've been sick.
Right.
I hope we'll be talking again if I'm not sick again, darn it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, and I don't know. I felt so moved recently by the last release that Willie did, because that same artist is at work in the newest record.
Yeah.
I know we're not going to have him forever, you know, and I feel we've been blessed with album after album after album for the entirety of my life. And you pick anybody, Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, pick whoever you want. Lots of them have, you know, 5 or 6 years that aren't that good. you know, they go through dark periods where they're finding their new voice. And I think, because Willie's always had such he's never gone through a lost period. I mean, no, he's gone through hard periods in his personal life.
Yeah.
But his artistic life has seemingly always been there for him.
Well, that ties perfectly to this record, because this record, Spirit, comes out of some of those really hard personal times for him. You know, it's the late 80s. The hits had started to run out. And then he has the IRS problems in 89, yeah, which stretches into 93. He lost a son. You know, Bobby, his sister, lost two kids. That was in a year and a half period. The label was talking about putting him out to heritage artist category. And 1992 was the first year he didn't release any music since 1957.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was it. And so, and it was because, you know, and he was because of the IRS problems, he was a butt of late night TV jokes, and they were making fun of him.
Yeah, I remember all that.
And he's serious, and he had not welched on his debt, and he made good on it later. But all of that was a really tough time. So now in 93, he puts out Across the Borderline, which is such a great record. And it's
unbelievable record.
Really hard to imagine that was a comeback record of sorts, but it was. But these songs on Spirit, which comes out 3 years later, are things that he wrote during that difficult period. That year when he didn't write or didn't release Too Sick to Pray.
Across the Borderline is a brilliant record, but it's mostly covers. You know, I mean, it's a lot of covers on that record, and they're amazing. I mean, it's but this album, I didn't know that, and that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Well, and this was the first album of nothing but new compositions, or nothing but his own compositions, since Phases and Stages in 74. Wow. You know, and so and he's always done that. There'll be, because, you know, there's two great originals, new songs on Across the Borderline. There's Still Is Still Moving to Me.
Oh yeah.
Which is like you were saying just now about Always Now. Still Is Still Moving to Me sounds almost like a pat expression. It sounds so simple that there couldn't be that much truth in it, but bullshit, there certainly is. You know, just like Always Now. Yeah, it's Always Now. That seems obvious and self-evident. Think about it for a sec.
Think about it for a sec, and then all of a sudden you realize, like, oh, the entire universe is in that song.
Yeah, yeah. But and that's the other thing. So with he did Across the Borderline with Don Was, and then the two of them worked on a reggae album for a little bit, and so they go to Chris Blackwell in Jamaica, I guess at Ian Fleming's old place or whatever, where Blackwell.
Yeah, Goldeneye. Yeah.
and they go there to see if he's interested, if Island will put out this reggae record, and Willie just happened to have Spirit with him. He had just recorded that with Bobby. You know, Mickey's not on Spirit. You know, it's just Willie sitting around in luck, and he brings everybody in for this quiet, meditative thing that he's working on to, you know, work through all this shit. And he takes that with him, and Chris Blackwell hears that and says, whatever we want to do with the reggae album, we can. We are releasing Spirit as soon as is possible.
Wow, I didn't know that story.
And that's how it comes out in 96, and that's how then it gets to you when you're nesting, you know? And what a great album to have playing. To have all of these thoughts and beliefs and ideas swimming through the house while you're getting ready to change your identity.
Yeah.
But I'm feeling okay, Lord. And I'm glad that I called you today. Never needed you more. I would have called you before, but I've been too sick to pray.
I have a question for you. Do you remember when, because it was part of this whole Willie revival period around Across the Borderline, do you remember when Johnny Cash and Willie did the VH1 Storyteller sessions? Would that be 98? So, okay, good. Because this is right around the same time period where I was falling back in love with Willie Nelson, Across the Borderline, Spirit. And then I think we all kind of intuited that Johnny was getting near the end.
Yeah.
And they did that VH1 special. And they were so magical together. And I remember seeing, I don't know if in the liner notes of it, Johnny Cash writes this thing that is so sweet and humble and moving, which is that he basically admits that he couldn't play the guitar anymore. when they did that.
Oh, wow.
And that he really faked playing the guitar the whole session. And he just kind of moved his hands because his hands were bothering him so much. But then he was like, that's when he realized how good a guitar player Willie Nelson was, that it sounds like they're two people playing the guitar, because Willie just did both their parts.
Oh,
you know,
he
Willie do a little rhythm, play a lead, do a little rhythm, play a lead, do a and it makes me realize that this window, this moment in his life, when you survive that level of a low, meaning family, personal problems, money problems, public embarrassment, public shaming, I now see that's probably why I came back into contact with him, because it was when the world came back in contact with him, really. I remember this is all during the same period when Maya, my oldest, was first born. Maya's grandmother runs the Tibet House, and she's very serious in her Buddhism. And she was shouting at the TV. We were watching it. She's saying, look at his earlobes. Look at his earlobes. Because she was talking about how, like, all the great lamas have these really long earlobes. And it's the mark of an enlightened soul. She was like, he's enlightened. And I'm like, I've been trying to tell you.
That was watching the VH1 thing?
Yeah, yeah. And I had this little baby in my arms making everybody watch this VH1. Because I was blown away by it. And
I was going to ask how you went about introducing your kids to Willie. If your dad brings Willie to you, how do you bring it to your kids? And that's one way. Check out them earlobes.
I can see you sitting around the table. That's from the family Bible Dad would read. I can hear my mother softly sing. Rock of ages, rock of ages left for me.
So when you're a kid and your dad's playing Willie for you, what Willie, because that's the thing, Spirit is an adult's album. If you had been 10 when you discovered Spirit, it might not have worked on you. You know, what Willie did you love then? And talk about the evolution of your life and your relationship with the music.
Well, if I was going to be really honest, my connection, my mom moved to the East Coast and we lived all over Brooklyn, Vermont, Connecticut, Atlanta. And I really missed my dad growing up, you know, he knows this. it was hard. He was really young when he was 19 when I was born, and you know, we missed each other. My parents split up and I was with my mom, and I would come to Texas to visit him all the time, but I really missed him. And Willie just came to represent my father to me, I think. And so I listened to him all the time. And as I was 12 and 13 and 14, I would buy those greatest hits records. You know, the last thing I needed, the first thing this morning.
Man, I love that song.
You know, I had Willie and Family Live, you know, that big double album. I played the hell out of that record. And in the East Coast, when you're a teenager, Willie was distinctly uncool.
Really?
Right? You know? Well, when I was graduating high school, it was 1988, New Jersey.
Yeah.
I was just the only person who paid attention to Willie Nelson. They were like, so, you know, Guns N' Roses was the closest to country music they could be into. And,
right.
But I never stopped loving it. And I think that, strangely, as I started paying more attention to music, I think the album came right after Redhead Stranger, but I wasn't aware of it till 14 or 15 with Stardust.
Yeah.
That's the album that lets you know, okay, there's a serious musician at work here. And also, right, don't forget, I'm an actor and I'm seeing him in Electric Horseman. Yeah.
Oh, right. And Honeysuckle Rose and Songwriter.
Yeah.
And all those made for TV movies.
And I loved seeing artists operating outside their lane and doing it well. We could even flip the channel and talk about his activism and what he's done for society and culture and elevating thought. As a young person, he kind of showed you a positive version of what an artistic life could be.
I was going to ask, because I'm curious about the line between art and life. And one thing that I've seen you say in places is that it's hard as an actor, especially like when you're doing stage stuff, because if you're playing an unhappy person or an unkind person, you're in that head for the duration of the production, you know? And I think you likened it to reading The Bell Jar every day for a month and a half.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's different for a musician, though, I guess, because Willie's life seems to be his art. When he comes in off the road, he wants to go in the studio and pick with Bobby and Jody and Johnny Gimble, which is how this record gets made.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because through some connections I have in country music and different things, I've been invited to several Willie Nelson concerts, and one of them, they didn't have any seats and they let me sit backstage. And I watched him go from his dressing room to the green room to behind the curtain to in front of the curtain. And it was exactly the same person. Meaning, I've spent my life backstage and most people aren't the same person.
Right.
They're not. And I don't blame them. I'm not.
Right.
It's very difficult when you feel 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 eyeballs on you to change the stance of your shoulders, to cop an attitude in your voice, to present yourself in a way in which you want to be seen. The person I saw backstage talking to his friends and, you know, having a glass of water and doing whatever he did, stretching, there was no vibrational energy change in his bloodstream when he walked in front of 30,000 people. That was his life. It was completely integrated. From my limited experience, I'm not friends with the man. Forgive me, Willie, if you listen to this. I don't know you. I know you as an artist studying an artist. You know, it's what it seemed like to me. And it was really inspiring to me. And if you're playing Macbeth 8 times a week, the play's 3 hours long, first of all. It's like a meditation on greed, power, anger, lust, and hatred. And it's an incantation. You know, they say if you're in a bad mood, hey, just breathe deep and smile. And if you do that for 30 seconds, it's amazing. Right. It's true. You do feel better if you do that. It's stupid, but it works. Well, the inverse is true. If you put on an angry, hateful, murderous, lusting face for 3 hours a day, try making cereal for your kids in the morning.
Better not complain.
They better like those Rice Krispies, or they're going to get that damn box up their nose.
I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah, exactly. My point is that what I've learned as an actor is what I first noticed with Willie is how it seems to flow through him. It doesn't get stuck in there. And I think the way you get to be Willie's age, writing at the level he is to let it flow through you.
Yeah.
And you just see that. Good times, bad times, in between times, boring times, exciting times. They're just moving. Still is still moving, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain how I feel. It won't go in words, but I know that it's real. I can be moving or I can be still, but still is still moving to me. Still is still moving to me.
If you made a Willie biopic, what's it look like?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because it's hard for me to answer that, because I made a biopic about Blaze Foley, and I tried to make the whole movie look like what I remember about driving to the Willie Nelson picnic in 1976. There's a Navajo rug in the trunk. There's a six pack of, you know, Lone Stars in the back. There's, you know, women with long hair laughing and, you know, dancing and guys having fun smoking cigarettes and standing ashtrays. You know, I mean, the look of that movie I tried to conjure, and that's, if I was doing a Willie biopic, you know what I would love to? If I was doing a Willie biopic, the change would be, I think what he's achieved as an old man is the high water mark. And I wouldn't set it in the 70s. I would set Willie's biopic now.
Uh-huh.
And because we don't have a lot of examples showing us how to age well. We have this country, the world puts a tremendous amount of energy into teaching young people how to go to college, fall in love, have a baby, and get a job, have a career path. And then they're done with you.
Yeah.
But you know, most of us are like 35, 40 when that happens, and we got a long life to go. And we don't have a lot of mentorship to show us how to get from 40 to 80 and be a meaningful, substantive human being.
Yeah.
And how to let go of youth gracefully, you know, how to absorb what is positive about where we are right this second. We don't have a lot of that. And, you know, the Nelson Mandelas of the world are few and far between, right? And
yeah,
and we need them.
Yeah, desperately. But so I wonder then, what would be the takeaway from that movie? You know, what's the great lesson of Willie's life?
Authenticity. He is authentically himself, and you don't have to like him or you don't have to care. Or
yeah.
You don't have to. But I think for all of us, you know, the trick is to be the best version of who we are, not the idea of who we want to be or who we wish we were. Or each one of us has a tremendous amount to offer the world with our life, the simple gift of our life. And when we make it smaller than it is, we hurt everybody. And I think that Willie has just been so, you know, the big breakthrough with Redhead Stranger is when he started playing like himself.
Yeah.
How he always wanted to play.
Yeah.
And I think that's, we all can do the same of whatever. Yes, his is iconic and he plays a large role in a lot of people's minds, and not all of us are destined for that. But we can be ourselves, and that is a great service in whatever way you can do that. And I think that whole Spirit album, and particularly Too Sick to Pray, is a great example of somebody relaxing into themselves and trusting who they are is enough.
Yeah.
I reckon that's all.
And thank you, my friend. We'll be talking again if I'm not too sick to pray.
Fans, that was Ethan Hawke talking about Too Sick to Pray. A huge thanks to him for coming on the show, and a big thanks to you for tuning in. If you dig the show, please subscribe, maybe tell a couple friends, or visit our page at Apple Podcasts and give us some stars. Please also check out our One by Willie playlist at Apple Music. And be sure to tune back in next week when we close out season 3 of One by Willie with his longtime record producer and co-writer, Buddy Cannon, who will talk about one of the most powerful songs they've written together and that Willie has ever recorded, Something You Get Through. One by Willie is a production of Texas Monthly Magazine. The show is produced and engineered by Brian Standifer and Patrick Michaels, produced by Megan Crite, with art design from Emily Kimbrough and Victoria Milner, and I'm your host, John Spong. We will see y'all next week.
At Still Austin Whiskey Co., we make award-winning whiskey 100% in-house, from grain all the way to glass. We only use Texas-grown grains distilled in the heart of Austin, where the wild weather helps age our whiskey to perfection. Go to stillaustin.com for delivery right to your door today. Still Austin Whiskey, the art of Texas whiskey.